Joined now on the phone by Park City School Board member Andrew Kaplan. Good morning, Andrew.
Good morning, Leslie.
So I first want to start with the fact that, as we've just reported for the second time this year, a president of the Park City Board of Education has resigned. Julie Eihausen submitting that resignation to you yesterday, saying that she'll stick on as president through the end of the month just to make sure that everybody gets a paycheck with her signature on it. But then effective by February 5th, will be off the board altogether. Are you surprised by that resignation?
I am surprised. And I think it's one of those things where Julie made a personal decision and felt that it was best to announce her resignation now. And I think the board and the administration respects that decision. And she's going to be greatly missed. I think tough to find someone with the same level of passion and enthusiasm for our children and this community's education as Julie has shown us. And, you know, she's been deeply involved in the district for the past 15, 20 years. So it's a big loss for us, and we're disappointed. But, we also respect that this is a huge time commitment, and it's a huge responsibility to be on the school board. And we respect the fact that she's made a personal decision to step down. And we obviously thank her greatly for her service.
Yeah, but Andrew, what's going on here? I mean, we have had two presidents this year resign, and the common denominator here is you and Petra on the board.
Well, I think that's a fair question. I think it's a new board. I think that the school district is going through some changes in terms of the direction that we're going. We had a bond fail, a couple years ago, and since then, there's been, almost a complete turnover of the board. And so, Petra and I are new to the board. But what I would say is that I think this is, this has been a change that's taken place over several years. And for better or worse, post the election this fall, we'll have, five new people, serving on the board from when that bond was defeated. And I think, unfortunately, that's the reality of this being an elected position, and the community has made a decision to elect obviously Petra and I, and then it will have an opportunity to elect new board members this fall. So, I appreciate the implication that the common denominator is Petra and I, but I would say that it's probably been a transition coming in the last several years.
Yeah, and we certainly don't know what happens behind closed doors as you meet in closed session each meeting. The word I have heard is dysfunctional. Would you agree?
No, I wouldn't agree. And just to clarify, closed session is a very limited part of what we do. In order for us to meet in closed session, there's only a few different things that we can discuss. One of them is personnel, and either specific mention of personnel and whether incompetency around personnel. The other is basically when we're discussing something that can't be discussed publicly, such as land purchase. So the closed meeting aspect is very limited. Most of the time that we spend interacting as a board is during open session and in front of everyone. And then obviously we can interact on a one-to-one basis outside of our board meetings. But, in terms of closed, it's not as mysterious as it might seem. We're very tightly restricted by law in terms of what can be discussed there. And we stick to that very carefully.
Yeah, and I neglected, of course, to mention another common denominator. That's the superintendent of schools, Amber Conley. How does she play in all of this?
Well, I mean, I'm not sure exactly what you mean by that. I think she's been our superintendent for 5 years, so I guess she is a common denominator in that she has been in service of the school district, during this turnover. But I think it's, having been on the board for 9 months, one thing I've learned, Leslie, is that there's always going to be turnover on boards. There's always going to be turnover on administration. And the most important part of our district, obviously other than our students, what I mean is the most important part of our district in terms of employees are our teachers, right? And our teachers hopefully have all very long tenure in our district. And you know, their careers could be 20, 30 years in our district. Second most important is our building principals, who are, you know, who are the administrators that are closest to our teachers. And then after that, it's kind of everyone else, the board and the administration. And, you know, it's not uncommon to have high turnover on boards as well as administration, you know, around the country and in the state of Utah. The average, you know, expectancy of a term of a superintendent is, you know, 3 to 4 years, which is very short. And a board member, you know, our terms are 4 years as well. So, you know, it's something that I wasn't really that familiar with before, you know, getting into this job and in talking to other districts and then looking at the average kind of term expectancy of these jobs. It's not that long, whereas our teachers and principals are expected to serve for a very long time. And we're very fortunate in our district that we have excellent teachers and excellent principals. And to me, you know, retaining them and having the consistency for our students, that's the most important thing. You know, the elected officials are going to come and go, and that's the way that public education is set up.
Sure. So the I don't have the calendar in front of me, but I'm guessing you may have a board meeting on the 26th, at which time a new president would be elected?
That's correct, yes.
Okay. And then the process for filling, Julie, I think we've just been through this. It's people just would submit their resume and a letter of interest to the school district?
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, Julie, her neighborhoods are Pine Brook, Timberline, Summit Park, Wagon Wheel, those neighborhoods. And anyone who lives in those districts is obviously encouraged and invited to submit an application. You know, fortunately, Julie has not left us in the lurch, and she's been very generous and given us essentially, you know, 4 months to fill that spot. And that gives us an opportunity to talk to a lot of folks and start this process now, but really try to get as many candidates forward as possible. And it's timely as well in that, you know, her seat was up for election this fall. So, it'll give a lot of people an opportunity to explore this, both the appointment as well as consider running. And if people are considering running, they're going to have to declare slightly after that, around March, sometime in March.
Okay. Well, let's move on. As you mentioned, children are the number one reason why we do all of this. And the district talking about spending $3 million in safety measures, including locking mechanisms, fencing of the elementary schools, school entryways being remodeled. The board voted unanimously in favor of spending that money and proceeding. Petra was concerned about comments from parents who wanted to know about the fencing and how it'll be designed and constructed. So what is the is it for one particular school that people are concerned about, or?
I think the most interesting one will be Parley's. So Jeremy, we already have fencing. You know, Parley's, we need to have some kind of perimeter set up, and obviously we have a lot of neighbors around Parley's who use the fields and their backyards open up on the school. And so we want to maintain that the open space nature of the field, but while also figuring out a way to have a secure perimeter. And so what we're going to do is we're going to work with the neighbors and figure out a solution that is the least impactful while remaining compliant with our safety protocols. So, yeah, that's a process. What we decided is that we are going to spend the money. We are going to invest and ensure that that our perimeters are safe and secure and that our schools are secure. And then there's going to be some neighborhoods and schools that, you know, we're going to have to work with the neighbors and figure out exactly the best way of doing that.
Okay. Let's see. The superintendent had mentioned that some renderings of what the fencing might look like. Is there a place that people can find those renderings online or anywhere?
Yeah, we have a couple different things that we've been looking at. What I'll make sure is that Melinda, you know, puts a couple of those out there. We have it on our website, but we're also going to be reaching out to our neighbors, as well, directly, and ensure that everyone sees it. And so it's going to be a decision that will be made by the neighbors as well as the district. It's not going to be something that we simply pick and dictate, but we will make sure that's out there.
All right. And then also you received an update on health and safety from your new associate superintendent of wellness, Bill Belknap. He's been tasked, I guess, to come back to the board in another 90 days with some written policies and procedures to give teachers throughout the district very concrete guidelines on how to handle not just the 504s, but the whole issue of behavioral and special ed needs. He felt that teachers all have good intentions, but there are no processes in place. So what will those processes look like? Just more layers of process for people to jump through when they're, you know, dealing with this?
I don't think so. I think the goal is actually to take the work away and the responsibility and burden away from the teachers directly and have processes and the support system in place so that it doesn't fall on the teachers or the individual buildings, right? And that's kind of what we've done in the past. Again, we're transitioning from a small school district to a mid-sized one, and along with that is a lot of policies and procedures that need to be written and put in place. And, you know, again, as I alluded to before, administrations come and go, but what we need to ensure is that there's policies that are lasting, and so that whoever is in, you know, my seat or Dr. Belknap's seat in 5 years, 10 years' time, we have processes in place. And really, you know, it involves hiring staff, most of which is completed, and that was part of the budget increases that we passed this spring. But a lot of it is just standardizing things, making sure that there's consistency across our elementary schools, and then consistency as students move through our district from elementary to Acker to Treasure, et cetera. So, you know, we're excited. I think that we've been policy light. We haven't necessarily been in compliance, recognize that, and we've received consistent feedback from our parents that they're unhappy with the way that the district handled things. And I think Dr. Belknap has come in and said, okay, you know what, we have a lot of work to do. And I think the board is committed to funding the work that he needs to do, but we also want to hold him responsible and make sure that there is consistent and steady progress as we move on, which is why I'm Member Butler asked for an update in 90 days. But we're definitely excited about what's going on there.
All right. And then, of course, nearly as important as the kids or the teachers, there was a discussion on the teacher evaluation system the district has decided to adopt. A lot of involvement with, of course, the Park City Education Association, which has 80% membership of the teachers. And they're also part of the development of the new guidelines. Kathy Einhorn says that the new evaluation process will align with the professional learning communities that already exist in the school. So do you feel like teachers are giving enough input on this new process?
Well, I think we're early days. And, you know, as I mentioned in the meeting last night, I want to ensure that the PCEA is intimately involved in the development of this. And that's the way we're going to do it. You know, JPASS is the current system, and it's antiquated, and, you know, when we were in negotiations over the new contract, that was one thing that was, you know, that was mentioned by our teachers as not being a perfect system. And so what we want to do is create a new system that fits in line with the professional learning community's model. And it's essential that our teachers are integral in the development of that system and that they are all buying in. Without an without buy-in from our teachers, the evaluation system isn't going to work. So we're looking to do things a little bit differently. We're definitely going to involve the teachers. This process is going to be ongoing, led by Dr. McConnell.
All right, and just want to also mention that the board did vote unanimously on its new hires. Business Administrator Todd Halber gave the update that you're still 5 full-time employees short of the hiring goals, still targeted to be $62,000 under budget. But is this what was budgeted, or is this, we're still pulling money out of the reserves, aren't we, to pay for this?
No, this is out of the budget. So basically, of the jobs that we have hired, they've come in $62,000 short of budget, $62,000 under budget. That number, that $62,000, doesn't include the other FTEs that we need to hire. But on a job for job basis, we're coming in under budget. So, you know, the takeaway is that there are some positions that are still out there. One of which is a behavioral specialist who will work with Dr. Belknap, and that's a priority certainly. And some of these jobs just take a little bit longer. But the takeaway is that the board and Dr. McConnell have figured out the correct levels of pay for our employees, and we're doing a pretty good job in terms of filling these positions and these roles. there's certainly some that are still outstanding. And part of that is we've made offers which, you know, weren't accepted for whatever reason. And part of it is we're still looking for the right candidates. And we take the hiring process very seriously. We want the best and brightest for our kids. And sometimes that takes a little bit more time than would be ideal.
Okay.
But we're well along the way there.
Andrew, anything else you'd like to mention?
Just another reminder, October 2nd from 6 to 8 at the hospital, the Blair Education Center, we're having our first community forum with regards to the master planning session, and it's an opportunity for everyone to come out and make your opinion heard. It will be led by a moderator from the University of Utah who's helping us with the master planning session. But please come. If you can't make it, let us know. We'd love to hear your thoughts. We'll be sending out updates post that conversation as well, so that the community understands the direction that the discussion took. And we look forward to everyone's involvement.
So, is there just a general email that people could email comments?
I will check on that. We'll make sure that there is on the flyer that goes out. I don't believe there's an email put on the flyer, but we'll ensure that goes out and is listed on the website.
Okay, and I know individual emails are certainly on the website. So, okay.
Yeah, of course, you can contact any of us or the superintendent or Melinda.
Okay, Andrew, thanks for your time this morning. Well, the Park City Council meets in a study session tomorrow starting at 4:45 with the annual Special Event Advisory Committee, or SEAC, update. Later on, the council was scheduled to award a $680,000 contract to an out-of-state firm for microtransit. In the studio with me, I've got City Manager Diane Foster, along with Special Events Manager Jenny Dearson. Good morning.
Good morning.
So, Diane, let's just start with this. As we reported just late last night, the decision was made by Park City Mayor Jack Thomas to pull the item of that microtransit contract. And you say that the city staff will no longer pursue this notion of microtransit project, at least this year. So that means that we just need to move on and we'll consider it next year? Or?
I don't want to leave people with the impression that this is going to be like the federal Affordable Care Act, that we're just going to try to keep bringing it back. What I think we'll do is that should City Council receive a groundswell of support from the community and they hear that people really want us to look at this, I think you could see in the spring, if that happened, that City Council could direct staff. But as staff, we will not reinitiate this one.
All right. And it's very reminiscent of the school board in 2015 bond. And it was just an issue of people kind of coming late to the party, not understanding what was being proposed. And I think you have an education and communication problem with this. You guys as staff have been working on it for months, and so you understand it. But still, I mean, I talk to people, they don't even know what the heck microtransit is. But I guess that the goal is to, and as I found in some literature, to provide equivalent or even superior level of transit service at current ridership levels at less money. That's the goal of this, right?
That is absolutely the goal. And Leslie, you make a really good observation. You know, we as staff, we own this, and I own this, I believe, and I completely agree with you, that this is ultimately a communication issue. And it's really hard, and we do struggle as staff. It's hard to find that balance between council wants us to move aggressively, they want us to push their critical priorities, and they want us to do pilot programs where we test ideas and say, did this work, did this not work, and how can we tweak it? And in that, the stakeholder outreach, right? You can't do 6 months of stakeholder outreach if you want to pilot something. However, and this is a good learning experience for us, is that we have to do more of that. And I'll even use parking as an example. I think the team has done an amazing job at reaching out to those people who are affected and having multiple and significant conversations with them. And yet, I still think we need to now make sure we're talking to the broader community. So I agree. I think people didn't understand that it wasn't door-to-door service. It wasn't a taxi service. And that according to the cost, that we had actually expanded this so that people who live in Deep Park Meadows or in Aspen Springs, and this even included part of the Snyderville Basin, that if you lived a mile, if you didn't live near a transit stop, you could call and get a ride to the bus stop. And that was the goal of the program, as you stated earlier and in another story, was to solve that last mile, first mile problem, to get people to the bus stop. And at the end of the day, I don't think this actually would have affected the taxi industry at all. I was just talking in the lobby with Sam Rubin, who's a great guy, and we really appreciate all of his work. And his team, they're looking, and we just talked, and he said, yeah, we're still going to launch an app. And I think it's great that they're going to launch an app, but it's a different service. And I don't think that somebody who normally takes a taxi into town is going to say, I want to get a ride to a bus stop, right? This is that trying to get that person who normally would take their car, say, hey, I've got the time. I'm gonna call this, and I'm gonna call what is a shared ride service. It might take them a little bit of time to get to me, and I'm gonna go ahead and intercept with a bus and get on that bus. So it's we're looking for innovative solutions. There's so much good that has happened between the electric bus. The Camas route has awesome. It's got over 50 riders a day. That exceeded all of our expectations. And while we're still working on some technical items with the e-bikes, that program exceeded everyone's expectations. And in addition to the $3.9 million grant that we got last summer for the electric buses, on Monday, we got awarded another $500,000. And we were surprised that we got that because the federal government, in the last round, we were the largest grant recipient, and they went ahead and gave us more money because this program is working. In July, we doubled our ridership from Kimball Junction with the Electric Express. So the reality is, as staff, we absolutely support council's decision to not want to they listened to the community, they were responsive to the community, and if this isn't something the community wants, we don't want to push something on the community. We want a real test, and we want to be working on the things that the community wants us to be doing.
So the cost of microtransit estimated to be about a third of what it costs to operate today's transit buses, and of course we know that a $50,000 electric vehicle certainly costs less than what an $800,000 bus does.
Mm-hmm.
Half of that bus, though, is paid for with federal tax dollars. Would those new electric vehicles also be paid for by federal?
You know, we've never applied for a grant for that, but we've actually seen Rocky Mountain Power come in with grants. We just found out that we're going to get a significant grant for our charging station. So I think there are probably granting opportunities at the federal level. I'm not sure at this point if they're actually funding those. But yesterday I had a conversation with Blake and Alfred, and I said, exactly how can we pay for this program and make it revenue neutral? And what I heard was they've actually identified the specific buses that they think we can cut and the specific routes that we think we can provide a greater level of service with microtransit and eliminate bus service to some of those areas that have lower ridership. So improving service, getting increased ridership and revenue neutral, it's an idea we still believe in. However, again, this is something that we know as staff that we didn't do the type of public outreach that we needed to, and that we didn't get people to understand the advantages of this type of system. And so it's not, you know, Miles Radiman said to Insa Reapin and I years ago when we were trying to run a green building seminar, you have to look at what's the right time for the community. And this isn't the right time for the community on this. Although I do want to mention, remind folks, if you're interested in taxi issues in general, that we do have a taxi licensing working group formed. Council member Nan Worrell will be the council liaison to that. You can go online. I just printed an application this morning and grab an application. And applications are due Monday, September 25th.
Okay. And so what's this committee going to do?
This committee is going to look at questions about taxi licensing. I think they'll also be looking at, do we need taxi drop-off areas, et cetera. And places around the nation have been looking at this. When you have all these transportation network companies and wanting to create a level playing field for all businesses. And so looking at everything from are there other things we can do for our taxi industry, all the way to should we look at deregulation. It's doubtful that we'll end up there, because I do think it's an advantage when you know that you get somebody who's insured and licensed and there are certain requirements that are higher when you get a taxi license from the city than are requirements from Uber. So you get a little bit more guarantee, and I think people should look especially after all we've heard about from folks about the importance of local businesses, I would encourage folks to go ahead and patronize these businesses.
So what does this mean for our Main Street employees? Because this was going to work for them to shuttle them between Main Street and the parking lot there off of Homestake.
It is. It's an important question, and it's one that I asked Blake and Alfred yesterday afternoon when we were discussing the idea of pulling it and talking to council about pulling it off the agenda. Ultimately, the mayor made the decision on this one, and council is supportive of that. They said they have no concerns whatsoever about being able to run those shuttles to the yard, and the survey is online right now. The survey's available for Main Street employees to let us know what are the hours that they work, and the team has expressed a willingness. You know, if we need to run a shuttle until 4 a.m., we will. And in addition to that, we will still maintain the guaranteed ride home program. So if there's a window in there that somebody, you know, all of a sudden they're getting out of work at 5 a.m. and there's not a shuttle, that they can take that.
Okay. Jenny, the SEAC update. Public also invited to attend the SEAC meeting today, 12 to noon.
Correct.
To give input on anything.
Yeah, and I think it's just really quickly important to mention that SEAC has really helped staff understand challenges and opportunities from a community's perspective over the last year. Specifically with their debrief of events, we've been able to provide balance to the event calendar, increase mitigation to decrease traffic and congestion, specifically in Old Town and in the neighborhoods, and then also helped events kind of find a way to increase their sustainable efforts. And those have really been our goals. SEAC has also implemented changes to the fee reduction policy. Their goals specifically over the next year are to increase public input and to understand the whole community's perspective for events. We're going to be working on a data and statistically relevant survey to send out to the community and gain some more feedback. And then for today's meeting at noon, we would love people to come out and give us their feedback, both the challenges as well as the opportunities and ideas that people have for events. I think events are a really important economic driver. They're an incredibly important community gathering place. We have permitted 9 new events this year, but they're great events. The Aspen Villas movie, the 5K9 Leash on Life event a couple weekends ago. These are great community events, and there's a balance between economics and community that's important for the community to come out and listen, but also to give that feedback.
And if you can't be at either of the meetings, then it's seac@parkcity.org.
And that is one of the most valuable tools. We understand that not everybody can get out for lunch. So SEAC, that's SEAC, @parkcity.org. Please send us your comments, and the committee will receive those.
Okay. Diane, also wanted to ask you about the $40 million in bonds that we're going to sell. This is not for Bonanza Flat. Those had already been sold?
Yeah, the Bonanza Flats bonds were sold back in May. These bonds are for everything from the property purchase to the Arts and Culture District to some other projects that we're doing at the city. And in talking with operations, budget, debts, and grants manager, as well as project manager for the Arts and Culture District, Nate Rockwood, he made it clear that he had figured out a way to group all these together, and interest rates are fantastic, especially for a municipality like us who has an amazing bond rating, and that's thanks to the good work of staff over many years and the fiscally prudent approach by council. And so we're quite optimistic about this, and it's up to $40 million. We may not float all of that, but it authorizes up to $40 million.
And so with this 40 and the other 38 this May, and plus whatever else we have on the books, any idea what our bond indebtedness is?
We actually still have a lot of headroom from a bond perspective, and it is one of those things that it's always, I think, important to remember, particularly for those taxpayers, that taxpayers in Park City, the individual property owner pays somewhere between 10 and 15% of the total bill for these bonds. That second homeowners actually bear the majority. They pay about 75 to 80% of the bill for open space and for these public improvements. And the Arts and Culture District ultimately is going to be funded by the visitor as well. So these are an incredibly good deal, especially for the local residents. Now, that doesn't negate the fact that your tax bill does go up, and that's an important thing, and the city is both aware of that and appreciative of the community's willingness, for example, to vote on a $25 million bond.
Okay. Also scheduled to spend the best $2,000 ever for someone to keep up the maintenance of our pianos around town. How many pianos are out there? Any idea?
So we have about 5 pianos within Park City's jurisdiction right now. And they are in need of maintenance. And so local resident Mark Maziar has been taking care of that program. And so we're looking to enter into a maintenance contract with him to kind of get those, revitalize those pianos. And we also think it's a great opportunity. The county's public art board also has taken on this project. So hopefully in the future, there's going to be some collaboration between the city and the county with this specific project.
Okay. Jenny, Diane, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you.
It's 8:45. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW.
The Colony at White Pine Canyon's KPCW supporter and its voice in the community. 18 build-ready ski in and out lots are listed on the upper mountain with access to high alpine hiking and biking single-track trails throughout the surrounding project. Tour information and lot availability at thecolonywpc.com or at 649-3411.
Hi, I'm Margaret Schneider of Schneider Auto Carrossery Body and Paint, KPCW's newest supporter. Located at 1180 South and 400 West in Salt Lake City, we repair most cars and light trucks, whether it be a minor dent or a major collision. Details, services, and more info at schneiderauto.net.
Park City is the most interesting town in the world. Our transit is electrified. We do not celebrate Labor Day. And we obviously believe in the poop fairy. We don't always listen to radio, but when we do, we prefer KPCW. Stay tuned, my friend.
Odyssey Dance Company's Thriller opens up at the Egyptian Theater September 22nd, running through October 8th. In the studio with details, I've got artistic director Daryl Yeager. Good morning, Daryl.
Hey, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
This is always a sellout, so I'm just going to encourage people now to go online, yes, parkcityshows.com and get,
yes,
tickets.
I mean, there's only 300 seats there at the Egyptian, and boy, it fills up fast. It does.
Okay, well, tell us about it for people who haven't seen it.
Well, Thriller is actually, you know, it's a series of vignettes of all your favorite Halloween characters. You know, Thriller is really the opening number. You know, Michael Jackson several years ago decided that zombies just have to dance, you know. So we have, you know, the zombies dancing at the beginning of the show, but then from there on we go, we have The Curse of the Mummy, we have Frankenstein, we have Jason Jam, we have Tap Dancing Skeletons, we have Lost Boys and the Salem's Witch Trials. So there's all these great Halloween stories that we've created in a dance format that people have just loved for years.
Okay. Anything new this year?
Oh, yeah. We have a new piece called The Justice League, the short version. And basically we have, you know, Batman and Superman and Wonder Woman doing a little dance out there. And, you know, it's actually very, very funny. One of the things that people really love about the show is it's very humorous. You know, we usually say 8 and above, you know, for people to come, because some of the material is scary, you know, but most of it's really, really funny. And I think that's the thing that people really, really enjoy about the show.
Okay. And you do this, I know, at the Capitol Theater. I think you do it in a couple of other locations.
Yeah, we have like 6 different locations here in Utah that we do it. Yeah. So, but Park City is our first and most favorite one.
Right. So how many people actually in the production?
Oh, we have 26 dancers. Well, actually 19 dancers in the show. And then we also have a group of Chuckies, like little 9 to 10-year-olds who are dancing with butcher knives and stuff. They're little Chuckies. We have a group of zombies that help us out, that kind of scare people in the lobby and stuff like that, that are really, really fun. There's around 12 of those that are in the company. So it's a pretty large cast.
Yeah. How many people total in the company?
There's 19 in the company right now. Yes,
oh, okay.
19 dancers in the company. 6 guys and 13 girls.
Okay. So I bet you got...
I actually have 2 companies going at the same time. So there's a Park City group, and then next week we open up in Ogden, then they go to Logan, and then Kingsbury Hall. This group will be here in Park City for 3 weeks. Then they go to Provo, then they go to Richfield, and then they go down to Tuacon down at St. George.
Wow, wonderful. So again, tickets start at $28, parkcityshows.com. Mm-hmm. What else do you guys do during the year?
Well, we have our Christmas production, which it's a new version of the Nutcracker called the Redux Nut Cracker. And so it's basically where Clara doesn't get a Nutcracker, she gets an iPhone. And so the whole show is based on what can happen when you go in and search on your iPhone and stuff like that. It turned out really, really cool. So it's kind of our version. It's for those people who've been to one too many Nutcrackers in their lives, you know. And so the music's all updated, but you recognize the music, but it has a hip-hop flair or lots of different styles that we've put together for that show.
So So will you be in the Egyptian with that?
We would love to, but he's so booked this year, he couldn't get us in. But we do that. We're going to be doing that at Kingsbury Hall also in December. We're going down to St. George and also Richfield and Ogden.
Yep. Okay.
Yeah.
And this, and you're like the genius behind all of this?
Well, yes, I guess something, you want to call it that. I'm also the guy who loads the trucks and stuff like that. You know, all the glamour stuff you have to do behind the scenes to get a show on. But yeah, I'm the founder of the company. We started about 25 years ago, and it's just been an amazing ride.
Okay. Hey, Daryl, anything else you wanted to mention?
Well, you know, like you said, get your tickets early because it's such a really, really good show. You'll have a great time. It's really fun in this. This is the most intimate theater we perform it in, and it really, really is fun to be so up and close and personal to the dancers.
Okay. Daryl, hey, thanks for coming
in
this morning.
You bet. Thanks for having me.
It's Daryl Yeager, the artistic director of Thriller and also the Odyssey Dance Company. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW.
G'day, it's Ian from Campos Coffee. Us Aussies really love a summer as much as we love supporting KPCW. We've got Nitro Cold Brew on tap. Affogato is made with Wasatch Creamery ice cream.
It's 8:52. Good morning. Well, for dozens of KPCW contributors who made a pledge during our recent pledge drive and pounced on those gift certificates from All Resort Group for rides to the Salt Lake City International Airport, there is some good news with last week's news that All Resort had closed their doors and filed for Chapter 7 bankruptcy, a total liquidation of the company in order to pay off their creditors. That left a number of our supporters stranded. In the studio, I have Sam Rubin. He's owner of Mountain Transportation Network, also Four Seasons Concierge, and he has agreed to make good on some of those rides. Good morning, Sam.
Good morning.
So what did you sign up for?
I'm not quite sure what we did, but no, you know, we're a big supporter of KPCW, and we heard that there was a lot of the supporters that had purchased these, you know, through the fundraising efforts. You know, we wanted to see what we could do to step up to make sure that not only KPCW, but also the supporters, you know, still could get what they were purchasing.
Yeah, so you do not do, or Four Seasons does not do, shared van rides?
That's correct. We don't do shared rides. We will entertain offers from certain properties. If there's three or four people from that same property, we'll share that ride. But we don't do the stop at one hotel, then the next hotel, then the next hotel.
So you'll take care of the people who had kind of the SUV rides?
That's correct. Yeah, we've actually already reached out to several of the supporters that have purchased one. Treated emails actually earlier this morning with one of them that's currently overseas right now. So we've already coordinated, and we're going to kind of elevate his return with an inside meet and greet and stuff like that and just really take care of them.
Okay. So those people that do have those, how do they contact you to make those arrangements?
We'll be working with KPCW, and we'll be reaching out to them individually. Or obviously, I'm sure that they could contact KPCW and they'll pass along our contact information to them as well. But they are taken care of.
Okay. Well, we appreciate that. Thank you. And of course, as you heard this morning, the city has decided to pull today's vote on the microtransit from the agenda. You were one of the finalists in this event, this item. So I know that you weren't happy about the contract going to downtown, or what was your concern about all of this?
Yeah, I mean, you know, to set the record straight, we are supportive of microtransit. We feel that there is a way that microtransit could work and could augment the bus line. I think when you look at what the cost was, the number of vehicles, how they were going to go from six zones to three zones, they were only going to drop you at one of three bus stops. And of course, obviously, being an out-of-state company, you know, I think that's where a lot of our concern was. I mean, our proposal, which is still on our website today, was really going to be more spread out. It was going to cover the entire area. It was going to go to nearby bus stops. We had a lot of the local for-hire community supportive of our solution on there. You know, and obviously, it was basically, you know, $400,000 less. It was 37% less per hour to operate than even, you know, the downtowner solution. So it was kind of like a why not us type of a thing.
Yeah. So, what I mean, you are a supporter of microtransit, and as I was talking with City Manager Diane Foster, I think most of the community doesn't understand what microtransit is. How do you define it?
Yeah, I mean, you know, microtransit really is that first mile, last mile, and I think really where the frustration was is that they went in and said Tesla, Tesla, Tesla without explaining why Tesla. I think if you step back and you look at some of the options, do nothing, which sounds like we're going to be doing. You know, using an existing for-hire car, using a hybrid car, using an electric car, and we've got all the data on our website. You know, you really see that an electric car does make sense. And then when you look at our environment, the hills, the mountain, the weather, you know, then unfortunately the Tesla is the only all-wheel drive. So it does make sense when you look at the operating cost, the residual value, that there's just a lot more that goes into it than a brand name. And I think if they would have gone on it that way, I think there would still be some resistance, but I think there would also have been a lot more people that have been supportive of it.
Yeah. So, I mean, any suggestions for the city as it moves forward? I mean, it sounds like they're not going to bring it back.
Yeah, I mean, I guess from what Diana said, it's up to the public. You know, with that said, you know, it's always been the goal of the local for-hire community to want to participate in the overall transportation, you know, mix. You know, we're going to meet together, you know, in the next couple of days. We have our app. It's already in the Google Play Store. We just didn't promote it because we didn't know if we were going to be winning or not. You know, but we're going to all sit down at the roundtable, the for-hire community, and we're going to see if we really can come up with a for local, by local type of app. For example, zone pricing, no surges, where you can favorite a certain driver, booster and car seats for children, corporate accounts. So really to get, you know, if you work at Skull Candy, maybe a discount ride to there, you know, working perhaps with the ADA city buses, proper insurance for children, FBI and TSA background checks, basically everything that the public has said, I wish Uber or Lyft could offer. These are things that the local for-hire community can offer. And, you know, we're going to really see if this is something that we can do and maybe hopefully have up before the winter season. You know, but like I said, we've listened to the public, and we really think that the local for-hire community can really step up and shine at this point in time and really give back to our community.
All right. So you're not going to be bringing on any electric vehicles. You're just going to do business, or the for-hire businesses are going to just do business as they have done, but now perhaps using this central app?
Correct. Yeah. I mean, maybe down the road, there could be a model where, you know, we bring in electric vehicles. Look, at the end of the day, I would love to drive an electric vehicle. You know, unfortunately, for the amount of miles that we do going back and forth to the airport and up and down the hills, and with luggage being in a ski town, there's just not a lot of storage in these electric vehicles. So maybe at one day in time that is an option. But I think immediately it would be using the existing for-hire fleet. So it'd be basically, you know, the 10 or 15 companies that are around town coming together and really launching this one local on-demand app that hopefully will cut down on overall traffic and give everybody, you know, the type of service that they've grown to love with Park City.
Yeah. So you mentioned the app was with Google Play Store, also iOS capability?
Yes, it's just waiting on approval. So, you know, it's there. You know, we are going to be tweaking it. You may or may not find a car right now. But, you know, like I said, we were gearing more toward the microtransit solution. So now we're going to have to just make some tweaks on the back end. So stay tuned.
Yeah. So, I mean, what would you find? I mean, what would that app do for people?
It would look very similar to other transportation network company apps that are out there that they're used to. But again,
like Uber?
Like an Uber, like a Lyft. But again, like for example, like with an Uber, like you may pay $10 today to go to some place, and the next time it's $12. And on 4th of July, it's a $30 ride. You know, some of the things that we're talking about internally are, you know, more of a zone price. So if you know that every single time it's $12 to get from point A to point B, it will always be $12. And, your children will be safe. And if you have the booster car seat or the car seat, you know, if you're a female bartender at No Name and you want to go home at night, you know, and you feel more comfortable with a female driver, you'll be able to favorite and request certain people like that.
Okay, I need to leave it there. Sam, thanks again.
Thank you.
Sam Rubin, again, owner of Four Seasons Concierge. KPCW News Time now, 9 o'clock.